This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Another year, another series of best of lists. There are plenty of sources if you'd like to find the top movies and TV and albums and Twitter feeds, etc. of 2014. Well, it's become a Word of Mouth tradition to go for the higher hanging fruit with Michelle Philgate, who's written for Salon, Vulture, The Daily Beast, and other publications. She was a longtime community bookseller and shares our fondness for the books that don't get full page ads or window displays. What we've come to call the literary equivalent of the Island of Misfit Toys. Great books waiting for a good home. You just have to know where they are. And that's why Michelle is here. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Michelle's list in order is posted online at wordofmouthradio.org if you want to follow. Michelle, as ever, pretty challenging year in publishing, contentious in some cases. How would you characterize the year for writers and for writing?
It certainly was contentious, like you said, but I think that every year brings something more complicated to the publishing industry. And there were positive things this year that I'd like to focus on. Jill Abramson, who the former editor-in-chief of The New York Times, announced that she's starting a new digital venture where she will advance $100,000 to a writer for a long-form piece of work, which is just amazing. You don't really hear about writers getting that kind of money, typically. Mm-hmm. Kickstarter has really taken off ever since Maris Kreisman joined them working on the book side of things. And Sarah Gerard, who has a novel coming out on $2 Radio called Binary Star in February, just funded her book tour through Kickstarter, which is really cool. And even more interesting, Coffee House Press, which is an established, well-loved small press, funded a book about cats on the internet. So, you know, I think we see a mix of the good and the bad every year. But as always, there are innovative things going on in the publishing world, and there are great books being written and great projects.
Well, let's get to some of the books that you feel were overlooked this year. We'll start in order with Praying Drunk by Kyle Miner. That was your number one. Short stories, which the writer instructs us, are meant to be read in order. Now, what makes this book a favorite for you?
This book, you know, a lot of the short stories deal with religion and all of its complexities. It deals with loneliness. A lot of his writing is dark, but it's always illuminating and sometimes even humorous. There's a line in one short story called The Sweet Life that I really love as someone who was raised a Catholic and has a lot of doubts about religion, which is, back at the farmhouse in the ramshackle house, everyone says the same empty words they always say about heaven and God and the way all things work together for good. I have heard them so many times, but now what they mean to me is that life is empty of meaning, so people must tell themselves stories about how and in what ways everything means.
Wow.
There are a lot of moments like that in the book.
Now, several of the books on your list are very well reviewed. I'm thinking Green Girl by Kate Zimbrino and The Plowman by Kim Zupan, if I'm saying that properly. A little bit about those books and why you think they and others did not get the attention that you thought they deserved.
Well, a lot of my favorite books often don't get the attention they deserve because I'm a big fan of finding books that aren't being talked about in the media, that don't have huge publicity campaigns behind them. And with Plowman, I reviewed that book for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous book about a jailed convict and the police officer who befriends him. They're both haunted by their own ghosts, and it's just a beautifully written, landscape-driven novel. With Kate Zimbrino, I've long been a fan of her work. She wrote another book last year, I think it was, that came out called Heroines. And this book, Green Girl, it was originally issued as a small press book several years ago, and just Harper Perennial reprinted it this year. And for any woman who feels like she's ever been lost, which is every single woman, and needs to kind of understand all the emotions and complexities that go along with being a woman, this is a must read. It's about a young American girl who's working at a department store in London, and she's dealing with her emotions as she's in this foreign city, and very much feeling like almost a foreigner in her own body. And it's just very good.
Michelle, you mentioned the media not talking about these books. How about the publishing industry? How much control does it have in making a hit?
Well, I mean, the publishers decide what kind of money they're going to put behind the publicity for every book that they publish. they absolutely help define and make big books. I mean, before Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code came out, people were, you know, there was a big publicity campaign for that, printing up advanced reading copies, getting people excited. And they often, you know, for bigger books that they're excited about, sometimes they'll print less advanced reading copies. For instance, when Donna Tartt's The Goldfinch came out, it was like a hot advanced reading copy to get. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they might have printed less for that. So getting the publishers kind of help start the buzz within the bookseller community, librarian community, book critics. And from there, it's up to those people to help spread the word.
Mm. You brought up a couple of books in your list that took some interesting literary risks. Dear Thief by Samantha Harvey and The End of Days by Jenny Erpenbeck. What can you tell us about these books?
Dear Thief is my favorite book of the year, and hardly anyone is talking about it, although James Wood of The New Yorker just wrote a long, very positive review of it, which made me so happy. She's a British writer. She's written several other books, and this one, I actually, before I started reading it, read a great review, I think it was in The Guardian, in which someone said that it's the reviewer said that it's basically like a novelization of the Leonard Cohen song Famous Blue Raincoat.
I read that myself.
And I was like, okay, that made me want to read it right away. And it's written as a letter to a friend who has disappeared. You don't really know what's happened to her. And there's a love triangle between the person who's writing the letter, her husband, and the friend, the female friend who disappeared. And you don't see a lot of books about female friendship, especially female friendship falling apart, that's written in a literary context. And this is just some of the most gorgeous sentences I've ever come across. I'm just crazy about it and trying to get everyone to read this book.
Mm-hmm.
But with Jenny Erpenbeck's The End of Days, for people who liked Kate Atkinson's Life After Life, I think, in which the main character keeps dying and then getting a chance to live her life over and over again, it's similar to that, but it opens with a baby dying. And then there's five sections of the book, and in the intermezzos, the writer asks, well, what if this didn't happen? What if the baby went on to live? And then they end up in the family ends up in Vienna, and it keeps going from there. So it's kind of like a philosophical, as I said in my review, choose your own adventure book, except the writer chooses for you. But it's really cool.
So that was End of Days by Jenny Erpenbeck and Dear Thief by Samantha Harvey. Well, we're visiting the Island of Overlooked Books with Michelle Philgate, who is a book critic, a writer herself, and for many years was a hand seller of books at community bookstores in New Hampshire and Brooklyn and other places. What have you got in the nonfiction favorites?
I seem to have gone with the nautical theme this year. There's Preparing the Ghost by Matthew Gavin Frank and The Sea Inside by Philip Hoare. Matthew Gavin Frank's Preparing the Ghost does what a lot of my favorite nonfiction books do, which is kind of defy genre. It blends memoir and history and science. It's mostly about the giant squid, and it's also about the writer's fascination with that. And it's also about the man Moses Harvey, who is obsessed with the Kraken and imagining his life. So that book was really just a fascinating read. And then the other one, also nautical, is The Sea Inside by Philip Hoare. It's, you know, anyone who likes the ocean needs to read this book. Again, it defies category because there's a lot of like personal memoir in there, but there's also history and stuff about dolphins and whales, and it's beautiful.
We actually interviewed Philip Hoare and found him such a delight about that book, The Sea Inside. Well, Michelle, you are drawn to books with strong, complicated female characters and voices, fictional or not, we found. Which books come to mind for you in this category?
Well, I'd like to talk about Love Me Back by Merritt Tierce, which is a book about a single mother working in the restaurant industry and all of her sexual exploits. It's really raw. It's really vivid. And she's not afraid to go to some dark places. It's a character who you really feel like you get to know and root for, even though she's making these terrible choices over and over again. And then the other one is Florence Gordon by Brian Morton, who's one of my favorite writers. His book Starting Out in the Evening was made into a movie. In this new one, it's about an aging feminist writing her memoirs and dealing with her family coming back home from Seattle, moving to New York City, and interrupting her flow of her life. And she's a very difficult woman, and it's a lot about her relationship with her grandkid, and she's just a very distinctive voice.
Okay, Love Me Back by Merritt Tierce and Florence Gordon, written by a man, by Brian Morton, but about a really interesting female character. Michelle, we've also turned to you in the past for books that one should bring home for the holidays and quietly disappear to read in moments that you need them. Any recommendations? It could be overlooked or could be a bestseller.
Well, is it okay if I talk about a book that wasn't published this year that I'm crazy about?
Michelle, we'll bend the rules for you, I think.
Because I love, it feels like devious to go to read the backlist because I'm always so focused on the new books. But Haldor Laxness's Independent People, have you ever read that book?
No, I have not.
It's fantastic. My friend hand sold it to me by saying that it's like Moby Dick, but with sheep and set in Iceland. He's one of the most famous. I think he is the most famous Icelandic author. And it's about sheep farmers, specifically one man, and who's a very difficult man, and about his family. But you can't just say it's about sheep. It's obviously about way more than that. And I'm loving it. I'm in the middle of it right now, and I keep telling everyone to read it.
All right. Tell us again the author and the name.
It's called Independent People by Haldor Laxness.
All right. We'll make sure and get that on your list. Brooklyn-based writer and critic Michelle Philgate, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You can find Michelle's work in The Daily Beast, Vulture, Time Out New York, The Quarterly Conversation, and other publications, and follow her on Twitter at Read and Breathe. And you'll find her full list of Misfit books in order, and you can add your own ideas on our Facebook page or at wordofmouthradio.org. Last week's announcement that the U.S. and Cuba will restore diplomatic relations sent Americans scurrying to buy tickets to visit the island. We'll take a look at pre-revolutionary Cuba through the life of Julio Lobo, a sugar trader and financier considered to be Cuba's last tycoon. That's after the news when Word of Mouth returns on NHPR.